He just got done telling me something I'm not going to do. He says I got to stand up there. When I'm with a group of Iowans, I'm on the same level you're on. And so I'm going to stay down here. I'm going to pick somebody. Would you come here and do me a favor? Or would you come and do me a favor? You stand here for me the whole hour, and I'm going to give you a job to do. Yeah. Well, if you aren't, then we'll have you sit down after 15 minutes and get somebody else.
Okay.
You see, with all these people that are here, if I start calling on them, they're going to think I'm trying to avoid somebody.
Okay.
And so you're going to have that responsibility of picking who's going to ask the question. Is that okay? Okay. Okay. Before we get going with the questions, I would like to open first of all, I think most of you, and maybe all of you, are here just on one issue. But just in case it's otherwise, I'm going to let you set the agenda. In other words, you ask me the questions. Or better than asking me questions, I'm here to listen, because that's what town meetings are all about, is listening. I'm one half of the process of representative government, you're the other one half, and we've got to listen to each other if we're going to have representative government. And so you can ask any questions on any subject, and I'll be glad to try to answer them. I'm also... here to listen because, as you know, we're in the middle of one of the most controversial issues, and it ought to be controversial. And the reason I say it ought to be controversial is because life and death affects every American. Health care is about life and death. And the other thing is, it's a reach, if anything's done, it's going to do something to one-sixth of the economy. That's a big... That's a big lift. And there are several committees that have tried to do something. So I want to make clear up front, and I know I'll be asked about this again anyway, but I say up front that there's a bill out of the House of Representatives, out of three different committees, but it's all put together by under Speaker Pelosi's leadership. I would not vote for that. There's a bill out of another Senate committee that I don't sit on. Kennedy-Dodd bill, and I wouldn't vote for that. Now let's get to then. What I think bothers and concerns a lot of people, and you're here for a lot of different reasons, but the extent to which I'm consulting and talking three Republicans and three Democrats on some things that could come out of the Senate Finance Committee, because that's the committee I serve on. First of all, if you wonder why we're talking, because everything you've seen out of the Democrat committees have been strictly partisan. So you might ask, well, how could something be bipartisan or less partisan or something like that? Well, not all Democrats think the same, and there's some that are like me that do not want any more government interference in health care. And so I suppose there's a lot of aspects of that, but the one that's getting the most attention, and only the one that I'll take time away from your questions right now to explain, would be a government-run health plan. And then why am I against that? because some of you will be here that are for that. Well, it's that way because at every meeting I've had some people that have come that have been in favor of it. I oppose it because of the Lewin study. I oppose it because of the Lewin study that says 120 million people will opt out of it. And one of the principles that I want to follow, if you want to keep the health insurance you have, you ought to be able to keep it. So if 120 million people out of, 175 million opt out, then the people that are left in it, the premiums are going to go up. And when premiums go up, then more people are going to drop out. And pretty soon you have what's really in the minds of the people supporting a public option or government-run plan is that we want to end up with a government running 100% of medicine in the United States instead of the 45% that they do through Medicare and Medicaid. And I want to preserve, what we want to preserve for America is choice. And I think that's very important. We want to preserve a doctor-patient relationship, not have the government interfere in that. We want to have medical malpractice medical malpractice insurance reform. Tort reform. Yeah. And that comes because you go to your doctor, he gives you a test because he thinks he's going to sue you, or gives you a lot of tests, and that adds up to 5% of the cost of medicine. Take 5% times 2 3/10 trillion dollars, and you got a lot of money. So we want to preserve those relationships. Let me take a look at my notes here because I think I'm about done. Oh, one other thing I ought to say. If you come because you wonder why I talk to people of the other political party, I think you have heard the term in government checks and balances. Checks and balances could be legislature checking on, checking the executive branch of government, but within Congress we have two parties, and the minority has a responsibility to check things that are irresponsible of the majority party, if you have the capability of doing that. And through the supermajority in the Senate, we have the capability of doing it. So I think as former chairman of this committee and now the senior Republican, I think I have a responsibility to do that. But I also have a responsibility to report back, as I do weekly from 4:30 to 5:30 on Wednesdays when the Republican caucus meets on health care, to report to my colleagues as well. Another thing is, if you are in the room, you know what's going on. If you're outside the room, you don't know what's going on. And I think you would expect your senator to know as much going on as he can possibly know, because there's enough going on that you don't know about that quite frankly, it's a job to keep up. But being in the room makes that a heck of a lot easier. The other thing is this, that in Iowa, we've got special health care problems. Now, maybe Montana and North Dakota and South Dakota and Kansas and Nebraska have them too, but rural America has a hard time getting doctors and a hard time keeping our hospitals going. And one of my responsibilities that I have, because I'm on the committee that deals with that, is to make sure that we look out for the interests that we have here in Iowa. So, as I said, any question is permissible. Oh, can I say something that speeds this up? Because, I give such long answers. If you make a statement to me, I'm going to be taking notes here. If you make a statement to me and you don't ask me a question, then I'm going to go on. Because then if somebody asks me a question, then I'll answer that question, and then we'll go on. But if you just want to make a statement, it'll speed things up awful fast. So I'm going to ask you to do two things. One, while I'm making notes, you hold this, and if I got to talk, hold it close to me. And secondly, start picking up. People are going to raise their hands.
Get it right back there. That one in the back with the glasses on.
The one in with the glasses on. You're the only guy back there that's got your hand up. Okay, go ahead. Okay. Well, you made a statement, but I can, and you didn't answer a question or ask a question, but let me say, because I just took some action in this area recently, and that was that I recently signed on to a bill put in by the senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, a constitutional amendment expressing parental rights.
So you're just going to step up there and put that up for everybody.
Hi, Senator. Thanks for listening. First, I wanted to comment and thank you.
I'll have to repeat the question.
Senator Baucus, for being true statesman, because you know that back to the Constitutional Convention, this government is run on compromise, and you two have done that. So thank you.
Let's take the microphone. Take it over to you. You hold it for me.
Okay. And thanks for doing the compromise with Senator Baucus. There are so many different philosophies and ideas in America. I don't think any plan that comes out will be acceptable to one part of the population or another to a very significant degree. And it's jealousy. When somebody has something that you can't have, it bothers you. So I would like to suggest that there be one benefit plan for every American in this system, and then people who want to... And then people who want to have other benefits besides that, they can do something like the Medicare supplemental insurance plans. So I'd like to ask your opinion on that.
Well... Both Senator, well, I shouldn't say, I shouldn't ever speak for Senator Baucus, but I feel in this area that maybe I can say that he and I are working towards something that is going to give Americans more choice than what your suggestion would be. Now, will we be able to, we're working and talking, and I don't know if there'll be a product or not, but we're working towards the direction of having, people to have choice.
Thank you. Senator, what is being done at the congressional level to protect our property rights? The eminent domain, as it now reads, allows municipalities to completely control the land around it. I hope that there will be something done in the following congressional meeting that can help us, because we're completely helpless if we're just landowners or property owners. Our property rights will be completely taken away.
Thank you.
You're asking a question that's divided between state and federal government. Most of the laws that deal with annexing, if that's the issue that you're talking about, are state laws. But there's a lot of property rights in the federal constitution that needed to be protected to a greater extent. And one of them deals with a bill that's being pushed very hard now by people that want more government control over private property, and it's it involves the Corps of Engineers, but it's something you'd be as interested in as the question you specifically ask. And that bill that it is in would overturn four or five Supreme Court cases that have designated the Corps of Engineers authority only over what's called navigable waters, and that is where ships can go. So, you know, partway up the Mississippi, but not, you know, not Beaver Creek, New Hartford, Iowa, where I live. I don't know which senator introduced the bill, but they've introduced a bill that will give the Corps of Engineers control over any place where a drop of water falls. So if you're worried about intervention by your local city on surrounding property, let me tell you, you've never dealt with the Corps of Engineers or EPA yet, and you're in for a much bigger fight than you are with the city of whatever city you're close to. I'm going to vote against that bill.
Thank you, Senator Grassley. My question is about Medicare, and you're working with Max Backus on financing this universal health care plan. There's 40 million seniors on Medicare. There's 80 million more coming. We know we have to increase funding to take care of that. The seniors are smart. They may be old, but they're smart. They know we have to increase funding for Medicare. We cannot let this be taken away, this $500 billion, the $160 billion for the Medicare Advantage program that's going to be taken away. We'll leave 10 billion seniors in a world of hurt. Seniors, I work with seniors every day, and I ask them what question they would want for you, and the one thing they want to know is, how can you possibly be talking about cutting funding for Medicare right now? Possibly, how can you even consider cutting Medicare funding right now?
Where we're going to be dealing with the long-term cost of Medicare is directly dealing with the way medicine is practiced in Iowa and other states in the Midwest, because if the entire country practiced medicine the way we do here, Medicare would spend one-third less money. So take one-third of $400 billion, and you come up with a lot of money, and if you can do those things, we're going to be able to extend Medicare a long period of time so seniors and baby boomers will have less to worry about.
Can't we look at cutting from NASA?
And we aren't talking about cutting Medicare. We're talking about doing away. Well, that is in some of these bills, yes. But remember, we do not have a bill out of our committee yet, and we have not decided on those things yet.
Senator Grassley, thank you for coming. My question, I guess, maybe represents a smaller group. I'm a small businessman right here in Dallas and Madison County. I'm trying to make some serious decisions about whether or not to expand, whether or not to grow. And what I'm finding from your committee and from everybody in Washington is that it seems like everybody out there thinks my pockets are overflowing. They're not. Sir. Every spending package, whether it's Medicare or expansion or cars or stimulus, is coming from my pocket. When, sir, can I expect a little help in preserving some of what I'm working hard for every day?
Can I ask you a question in return? Are you talking about as it relates to health care or as it relates to everything? Okay. Well, I think the biggest issue for small business, and I say this maybe because I'm on the tax writing committee, which is the finance committee, maybe on another committee I would say coming at it from a different angle. But most small businesses operate on cash flow. And so when there's efforts to increase taxes and marginal tax rates tend to hit small business very heavily. And so, where I hoped I helped in 2001 when I was chairman of the Finance Committee and taxes got up to 22% of gross national product, where on a 40-year average they're about 17 or 18%, we got the largest tax cut in the history of the country. And how that helped small business, was being taxed at a marginal rate of 39.6, with some other things added in that are kind of smoke and mirrors, really making it about 42%. We reduced that down to 35%, so small business wasn't paying more than corporations. So I see the best way I can help small business, well, there's one of the best ways is on the tax flow and your cash flow and the taxes you pay. Another one is on tort reform, because so many small businesses get hit on such high insurance costs because of tort reform. Okay, now you pick the next guy.
Who are you talking to?
Yeah. Whichever he's picking them, whichever one he picks.
Hi, Senator DeGrasse. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. I've been a critical care nurse for over 30 years, and I'd like for you to tell us the proposed bill that's being presented. If it's passed, what benefits will that bring to the citizens of Iowa? I would hope that we could all, continue to be respectful of each other and courteous, so that we can have some minimal dialogue. Thank you.
Yeah. For one thing, making sure that reimbursement that we almost have to work on every year is not cut, because the formulas we have in place, particularly for doctors, but there's other healthcare providers as well, that would be very harmful if they went through. Now, out of the last 10 years that formula has been in place, we've done it all except for a six-month period of time to keep those formulas going so that reimbursement would come back. In one of the bills that we passed in 2003, the Medicare Modernization Act, we did get a lot more money, about $25 billion, for the 28 states under the national average, because you couldn't take money away from the high states, which you probably should have done, but you couldn't get it done. So we added money in, and Iowa got $579 million of that pot of money, the second highest of any state. Now, another thing we need to do is within the delivery of medicine, we need to get more primary care physicians. We need to make greater use of nurse practitioners, physicians, assistants. We need to get an ethic within medicine that nurses can do a heck of a lot to deliver health care that they never get credit for delivering.
Okay. I got one more back.
Senator, I have a statement first. I believe that nationalized medicine is actually another tax. I have a question for you. The question is, do you know of another nationalized healthcare program anywhere in the world that works? We know that California doesn't. We know that Massachusetts doesn't. We know that Britain doesn't. So there's a yes or no question there. The next one is quite simply, do you know a government industry that is run more efficiently and saves more money than private industry? And the last thing, is, if this is so good for us, the American people, why has Congress excluded themselves and their family from this program?
The answer to your first question is no, but I'd like to go a little bit further if you'd let me. And I always argued I shouldn't give long speeches. But the reason they work at all is because you get rationing. And I'm not for rationing of health care.
Yeah.
And if I could speak to the people who don't think I ought to be sitting down talking to Democrats at all, or three Republicans and three Democrats talking, I would like to say that there's two things that the Republican caucus asked me, well, three things, asked me to make sure that two we don't do and one we do do. And one was to make sure that we don't have any rationing. Number two, to make sure that we don't have any government-run plan. And number three, to make sure that we have medical malpractice tort reform. See? And on the other issue, first of all, because your question was about Congress being included in a government plan. Okay. First of all, I'm against a government plan. But if we do have a government plan, Congress should be included. Congress should be included.
With the same benefits.
Okay, but he asked if we did have one, should Congress be included? And they should be included. And let me say why I take that view. It's not something that's newfounded. In 1995, I got a bill passed that did away with two sets of laws in America. For 60 years, we had a practice in Congress that when they passed a law that affected business here, unemployment, minimum wage, safety, civil rights, disability, you name about 16 laws that fall in that category. Congress always exempted itself. And I can't give you a reason why, but it was wrong. It was wrong. And so I got a bill passed that eliminated one set of laws for Capitol Hill and another set for the rest of the country, because those laws now apply to Congress because of my bill called the Government Accountability Act. And so the same principle applies to his question, that if we have a government plan, which I don't want, but if you have it, if it's good enough for you, it ought to be good enough for me. By the way, who said Social Security? I pay into Social Security. Yeah, I said no. Yeah, okay.
Senator Grassley, please forgive my Luddite teleprompter here. I have heard your recent rhetoric about how we all want the same thing as Obama, health care reform. I disagree on every level. There is nothing a liberal wants that I would agree to, and we have to stop giving ground. Our health care costs have risen over the years and decades in direct relationship to every new expansion and incursion of government into health care, with its inherently immoral cost shifting and C-Tech style fraud and cronyism enabling tactics, once again proving that government isn't the answer, it's the cancer. This current health care bill exhibits the liberal culture of death as nothing else ever has, at least in America. I have read many of the provisions laid out in the bill and find it unbelievable that any American, let alone Republican, would even attempt to find or make a redeeming quality in it. Socialism is the kindest term one could use. Sir, I'll get to my question. Thank you very much. I waited a long time for this opportunity. It is sheer tyranny, enabling an all-powerful, all-seeing, all-reaching government the power of life and death that was once understood to be reserved for God alone. There isn't one voter who would want any part of this if they actually read and understood the bill, because no one will be left unharmed. We, in my family, are Bible-believing Christians, and we will in no way give over to the state those decisions about which we are accountable to God. You need to know, sir, that I believe with every fiber of my being that you are being instrumental in the legitimizing of the malignant perversion of a government that once protected our freedom yet now seeks our enslavement to a godless monstrosity. And I have no doubt this will be used as a coercive force. And I don't believe that is your intention. I like you. But I believe it's true. And where do we go now? There's no America to run to anymore. And I ask you to get a vision consistent with our foundings, which provided us with freedom to live openly in the blessings of our God-given, inalienable rights. And I am sorry to give such harsh words, but I and countless others are left with no choice but to take a stand where others have appeased and conceded while there is still any recognizable America left for which to fight.
Thank you.
One last comment, please. One last comment. There are truly good and inspiring comprehensive options out there, such as Congressman Steve King has articulated, that preserve our liberties and rid us of the poisonous government regulations that seek ever greater control and deliberately hamper a naturally cost-reducing, free, state-to-state and business-friendly marketplace with the tort reform necessary to sustain it. And this is no less than liberty versus tyranny, good versus evil, and there is no middle ground. With whom will you choose to stand?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I would say, first of all, she may have not heard me in my opening remarks. The bills she has read are out of committee. They're written. She can read those. And I told you I would vote against those bills as well. We don't have any bill. We may never have a bill. Or you could have, after Labor Day, you could have the Democrats deciding to go ahead on their own. Now that worries me. And one of the reasons why I talk there is because if they do go ahead, this is what I fear. They get done what they want. They're going to change our health care system forever. Forever. And so you understand, I feel a little bit like the boy sticking his finger in the dike trying to stop the ocean from coming in, because one thing, this town meeting we're having here with 300 or 400 or 500 people, and it's been that way all day. If I had not been at the table, there would have been a bill through the committee the week of June 22nd. And it would have been through the Senate by now because there's 60 Democrats. So I think that I have, by sticking my finger in the dike, I've had an opportunity to give the grassroots of America an opportunity to speak up, as you're seeing every day on television. And I think that that's a good thing. And again, I would repeat something that I said earlier. Why is it important for people like you to weigh in? And it's important because health care is life or death for everybody. And because it deals with 1/6 of the economy. So I agree with what the lady said, and what she said about Congressman King's ideas are ideas that I bring to the table in the other House. I can't do anything in the House of Representatives, but I bring them to the table in the U.S. Senate.
Senator, when a bill gets finalized, and why don't we just put it to a vote of the American people?
Yeah.
And secondly, my wife and I have an excellent health care plan. We've got a dental rider, a vision rider, and short and long-term disability. If this House bill gets crammed down our throats, what will happen to those, and does your committee take any of those ancillary coverages into consideration?
The first question is easy to answer. It's not the answer I'd like to give you,
because I believe in referendums. But we don't have the United States Constitution for 230 years has never had a referendum provisions. We do it through constitutional amendment and through approval by the states. On the first one, we would leave those, we would leave the development of plans to the companies as long as they meet certain actuarial values. But there's a big difference in actuarial value. So there's, I would say, something that's there for everyone. But remember, when I say we, I'm meaning that we're talking about those things, and there's nothing finalized at all. And as I just said 2 minutes ago, who knows? Maybe at the table today, maybe not at the table tomorrow, but I've made my mind up to one thing. I'm not going to walk away from the table. I'm going to be shoved away from the table.
Thank you for taking the next question. I'm a God-fearing Christian. I'm also a liberal. So there are, we are out here. I want to ask you why you won't use your strong Republican voice to clarify the outright lies that are out there about the programs that are being proposed. I see signs that say Kennedy lives, Grandma dies. I see signs with Obama in white face as the Joker. I see signs comparing him to a Marxist. I see this rudeness in Iowa. Thank you.
I at least got part of her question, and there's two things that we ought to be civil with each other on and have civil discussions. And let me explain to you why. One of them, well, let me ask you a question. What are two things that people always brag about never talking about? Yeah, you're right. And if there's any two things we ought to be talking to each other about is religion and politics, and we ought to be able to do it in a civil manner and respect each other's views. Now let me speak to the point she brought up about what people are making out of the various bills that are out there. The bills are online, or if they aren't online, they're supposed to be online, and every American can read them, and if I wrote a bill, I would have to justify it to every one of you that asked me to, and I'm going to leave it up to the people that wrote the bills to justify them.
Senator, thank you for taking my question, and thank you for being here. While I am an Obama supporter, I've also supported you with my contributions and my vote for the last six terms, and I intend to do so again. My question has to do with your reluctance to support a public option, and it is centered around a couple of things. One, we have public options in our secondary school system today. The University of Iowa, Iowa State University, UNI, are all basically public options, as opposed to Drake University and others being private options. It works. Number two, Medicare, Medicare Advantage are examples. Medicare is a public option. Medicare Advantage is a private option. For those of you that don't know it, Medicare Advantage costs us, the taxpayers, 17% more to support private insurance industry providing Medicare to be a Medicare recipient. My question, Senator, is I know you're a fiscal conservative. Surely you would agree that the idea of giving another $170 billion to our insurance companies to provide Medicare services is not a fiscally conservative way to go. Thank you.
On the point of Medicare Advantage, after the 3 years that it's been operational, and we've got it in rural America, and remember that that was part of the reason that we put that subsidy in there, because Iowa never had Medicare Advantage, and rural America never had Medicare Advantage. They had it in Florida and New York, big cities, big states, but not in most of rural America. And Medicare is a national program. And so if Iowans are going to be in a national program and be taxed for it, they ought to have the same services that they have in the rest of the country. So that's why we worked hard to get Medicare Advantage in. But now you are partly right. That subsidy is too big, and that subsidy will be dramatically reduced. And I think reduced in a way that's going to be much fairer to rural America. As an example, Dade County, it costs $1,100 a month. In Iowa, it costs $700 a month. They're wasting a lot of money in Dade County, Florida, just the way they practice medicine. And so we're not going to subsidize them that much more. And we're going to equalize to a greater extent. So we will be able to save some money from Medicare Advantage. X number of dollars, I don't know, because I don't have the figure in my mind. But we've accepted that. But we're going to do it in a way that preserves it for rural America.
Thank you, Senator. My question is, what are you doing to keep the illegal immigrants from getting on this health care system?
Well, in the discussions I've had in our group, and these are just discussions, and they're just talks, there's no bill, but I feel confident that there would be a provision that no illegal alien would get any help out of that bill whatsoever.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Two really quick questions. I'm a small business owner, and I just wanted to know if you would be opposed to, or excuse me, if you intend to oppose the interchange bills that are going through Congress right now. I'm afraid that using my credit card as capital to run my business, I'm not going to have, it's going to raise my bills, basically. That's my first question. Second question is, I understand you don't want to ration health care. I want to know what you might be able to do for folks with chronic illnesses, such as diabetes. My sister was diagnosed with diabetes when she was 4 years old and basically can't get individual health care. She was just laid off. I was wondering how you might help her.
Yeah. Okay. You say the person that had the disease was laid off, or you? Yeah. Okay. Well, the first one, we're trying to work. It doesn't come in the committee that I've been talking about, the Finance Committee. It comes in either the Banking Committee, and some of it is in the Judiciary Committee. And we're trying to work out a compromise in that area, and most of it resolves around transparency. The fact that you can't post what other cards charge, and the fact you can't do that, is a way of giving pressure to one card to have an advantage. And then the other one would be to what extent there'd be some regulation of that rate. But that's in compromise talk right now. The second one is, and this is one of the lesser controversial things that we've been talking about, but doing away with the discrimination that comes through pre-existing conditions. So, okay. And I can say that even though these other bills I said I would vote against, I think those other bills would also have those provisions in it, doing away with pre-existing conditions.
Red shirt.
Thank you, Senator, for coming to Adel today. I want to know why Medicare fraud isn't taken more seriously. Think how much money could be saved in the healthcare system if we went after fraud. And I've also heard that illegal immigrants are going to be counted in the census. Is that true? And why is that true?
I think I believe it is true, but I want you to know that if we get a chance to amend the law not to do that, I'm going to vote for an amendment not to do that. See? And so that's where I'm coming from on that issue. On the other one that you brought up, Medicare fraud, just as an example, a month ago, 30-some people in Detroit and Florida, I don't know if they were working together or separately, but they were taken in for $7 million of fraud. And another one was in Houston, Texas, just a week ago, where several people, including doctors, were arrested for Medicare fraud. And one of the things we're going to do is to put more resources into Medicare to get after fraud. And another thing, and the most important thing we got to do, is to make it more difficult for any business person or person that's an illegitimate business person to get a Medicare, what do we call those Medicare numbers that you get? No, Medicare for selling things. Provider number, see? Anyway, we've got to make it more difficult because you could go get one, it's my understanding, you could go get one of those right now yourself if you want to defraud the federal government. So there's something wrong that we're giving those out. Another thing, though, that I want to, that you remind me to, for the benefit of everybody, you sometimes hear that we ought to have a government-run plan because Medicare administration is so much cheaper than what private insurance does. But see, Medicare doesn't do much about fraud, whereas private health insurance puts a lot of resources into making sure that there isn't fraudulent activity against that. See? Yeah. Okay.
Senator, thank you for being here. I appreciate this opportunity. This is so much different than writing to your staff and waiting for a response sometime later. I've got a concern, and my concern is the fact that how you voted for the bailout last October for the banksters. I monitored this. I watched this. I called your office numerous times. Your staff reported numerous times that the people calling in were overwhelmingly against this in the 90 percentile range. You voted for it anyway, sir, and I haven't forgiven you for this yet. I'll let you clarify that, but first I ask another question that entails that. I don't understand, first of all, how this is even legal. First of all, it's unconstitutional. Point two, I don't even understand the legality of it. To my understanding, sir, appropriation bills have to originate in the House. The House voted and defeated this very bill, sir. It should have been dead. How did it get passed on to the Senate, and you guys revived life into it and attached this to a parity bill for the mental health? How do you attach a $780 billion with a B amendment to an existing bill? I don't get this. This is like a housewife going to the hardware store buying a gallon of paint and telling the cashier she wants the house to go with the gallon of paint she just bought. And after it passed the Senate from you folks, you sent it back to the House for final approval. I don't understand the legality of this. Please clarify this.
Yeah, I'm glad to clarify it. Thank you very much. First of all, well, wait a minute so I can talk to you, please. Because you may want to be asking you a question. It was split in two. So half of it was the first half, and then the second half. And the reason I voted against the second half is the reason I'm going to give you why I voted for the first half. We were lied to by Secretary Paulson.
We knew he was lying.
Okay. Now, and let me explain to you what they were going to do with the money. They were going to help homeowners and take what's called toxic paper out of the system so the good credit could flow. And you know what they did 5, maybe 10 days after the bill was passed? They bailed out banks with it.
Yeah,
so that's why I voted against the second tranche of it. And that's why I voted against the GM bailout. That's why I voted against the stimulus package. That's why I voted against the $1 trillion budget. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Recently, the president was in Mexico with the president of Canada. Is there any future plans, as there was in the Bush administration, for linking the Americas with the Obama administration? There's been something chaotic every week. Do you see this coming down the road?
I have tried to follow online reports out of Guadalajara over the weekend, and I didn't see anything that existed with Bush where there was agreements signed or anything like that. But remember, the best certainty I can give you is if anything like that was done, it would have to be approved by Congress. There's no joining of countries that would compromise our sovereignty that could be done without Congress voting on it, and quite frankly, you know, Congress would never approve that. But also what you want to remember is that the people of Mexico have a lot of pride about their country, and they wouldn't want to join the United States, and the people of Canada have a lot of pride about their country and don't want to join us. So I can only assure you that I would vote against that. And also, there's another issue connected with it that you didn't bring up, and that's involved with the highway. And if there's going to be anything done like that, it would have to be in the highway bill of what's supposed to pass this year, but it probably will come up next year. And so far, I've been watching that because people like you bring this up at my town meeting, so I feel a responsibility to keep on top of it. And I haven't seen any indication of anything that's going to have an 8-lane freeway between Mexico and Canada going through the middle of Iowa.
Senator Grassley, I agree with you on the parts about, you said that health care is a matter of life and death, and I might add bankruptcy. Because if you don't have it, I will guarantee you will go bankrupt. The other thing that I wanted to ask about was, you quoted the loan group. And are you aware that the loan group is a subsidiary of the big health care company, whose CEO earns $3.2 million a year, which comes out to $102,000 an hour. Surely we can do better than that.
The reason I'm aware of the relationship to a insurance company is because when I was over in Panora, a person brought it up like you did, and they said that. But otherwise I didn't know that. But it is something that isn't only quoted by members of Congress as an authority on health care issues, but it's also quoted in a lot of the academic press as well. I think they have a good reputation of studying health care issues. On the first one, with bankruptcy, in some of the talks we've had, and now I can only talk about the talks that we've had in our finance committee, I don't know for sure exactly whether the Pelosi bill or the Kennedy bill deals with this, but there is we take off caps on caps that you have on insurance of how much total health care you can get from one sickness. And we would expect that to keep a lot of people that would be in bankruptcy because of medical problems out of bankruptcy.
I would just like to thank, I would just like to thank you for coming here, first of all. And I would just like everyone to not boo at my question, if that's okay. Okay, according to the Center for Financing, Access, and Cost Trends survey about medical expenditures, premiums in Iowa have gone up 88% since 2008. If you vote no on this bill, what is your plan to change the rising cost of premiums?
In first of all, that's a major problem all over the country, and particularly it's a problem for small business that have small groups, but it's also a problem for individuals as well. There's several things. I don't know whether I'll think of all of them, but one is more competition through the ability to sell health insurance across state lines. That would very definitely help. Another thing is to get every health plan on an exchange so you can get in and in consumer-friendly languages compare prices, compare plans, and make all that information available so you have it and you aren't dependent upon anybody else and you can understand it.
Right back.
Come over here.
Sir, I have a statement. I'm a conservative, and what we expect is for you to fight for us. We do not want this nation to be socialist. Fight for us. Stand up. Don't give an inch. I want to thank God for Hannity, Hannity, O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, and Sarah Palin for calling it what they said. Stand up and fight. Fight. And to whoever, Democrat or Republican, for whoever Senator or Congressman, vote for this bill, we will vote you out.
Good afternoon, Senator. Thank you for coming to Iowa again. We're happy to see you. I'm a small business owner in West Des Moines. I've been there since 1980 in my business. And we have a business axiom I've always used, that solutions, not problems. So I'd like to bring you a solution to some of the money problems, if I could. And one of them was, would you like to save $200 billion on the health care issue? If the answer is yes, then let's change medical malpractice law. The trial lawyers are taking a lot of that health care money home to the bank. And, you know, they should earn a living like everyone else, but we're paying the bill. And it gets kind of old after a while. Defensive medicine is costing the doctors a lot. 25% of their time is going for defensive medicine. And that's $200 billion out of the $800 billion. Can we talk about that a minute?
I agree with you 100%, and I support a cap on punitive damages. I think it's the best way to do it. There's another way that's being considered in Congress as well, too, and that would be to give doctors who show, if they're sued, use as a rebuttable point if they follow professional protocols. And we probably, another place is to set up arbitration or health courts. There's been a lot of academic study on those as doing some good, a little bit like you have drug courts, special drug courts, we'll say in the state of Iowa and other states, to serve a special purpose. The idea is to keep things out of the expensive environment of a courtroom. But that would be the caps would do the very best. And states that, like Texas, states that have put in caps have, in fact, just recently I talked to some Texas business people that say that all of those lawyers that used to be plaintiff's attorneys for medical malpractice, they don't have any business now, so it's easy to hire lawyers to do other work down in Texas now, maybe even save a little bit of money.
Gentleman right back. Over here! This gentleman right here.
Must we be kept in slavery to the insurance companies? Cannot we have the freedom for public access? That is my main concern.
It's an idea that I wrote down. We have not considered it. I'm glad to give it consideration.
Senator, thank you for coming today. I read about 400 pages of this H.R. 3200. I bet that's probably more than most senators have read in Washington on this bill. This thing scares me to death for my three kids that are home. Question I have for yourself, in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, where it talks about the limited opportunities of the government, where does that state that government has these powers to take over health care?
Well, it doesn't say that, and that's one of the reasons why I would be working to make sure government doesn't take over health care.
What?
And I report to him regularly.
Okay, I've got three questions. One's dealing with education, the other's on my health care. I'm a substitute teacher. I get no health care benefits, and in order to get a teaching job, we have to put our duty in as substitutes. So my concern is the fact that if you end up passing where the government says I have to have health care, I don't know that I can afford to pay it and everything. So that's a concern on my part. I have a suggestion, too, on taxes that we turn around and give a tax break if we join a health club. Because we've got so much talk of obesity in this country and everything else. If some of the people get out and exercise, their health care costs are going to go down. Okay, the other thing is the fact that when I'm looking across the country for a teaching job and everything, my license doesn't go from one state to the next state. I'd like to see the licenses go across. It doesn't matter if you take a practice test and everything. Your license is different, whether it's in Massachusetts or whether it's in Alaska or it's in California. And it would make a lot easier for the ones of us that are out there trying to get a teaching job and educate the children if we can have our license go one state to the other. My cost to get a license, let's say in Alaska, is $200. My license to get one in Kansas is $30. So the idea is the fact that and they are not reciprocal. And the idea is the fact that if I spend $30 in one and have no guarantee of a job, I can't afford to give $200 to another state. I'm asking you, can you please see about getting it go across borders?
Well, the way this works, if you have to have your state legislature join a compact that does that, and Congress has to approve the compacts, and they're compacts for reciprocity. And if that's such a compact were proposed, I would vote for it. Yes. Now 5:30's come, so I've got to go to Des Moines for my call-in program. I hope that you will call in questions to me tonight. I'm going to be on your public channel, Mediacom, for my monthly call-in program. It's another way of getting people's opinions and answering questions from 6:30 to 7. I do that monthly, and I've been doing that for about 20 years. So it's another way that you can communicate to me your views and express your opinions. Thank you all very much for coming.